Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the Craig BioCraft Laboratories shareholders call. All participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. Your lines will be muted for the duration of the conference. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Kim Thompson, CEO of Craig BioCraft Laboratories. Mr. Thompson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, shareholders. Thank you for joining me. Just so you know, Mr. Hansel is here also with me. We're going to talk about a number of topics here. And first, let's talk about corporate matters, and then we can talk about the recent scientific breakthrough, products, further research, and development. First, on corporate matters. Yesterday was, in my view, a significant day in the history of the company. And those of you who are current shareholders know what I'm talking about. Those of you who are on the call for other reasons may not know what I'm referring to. Yesterday, the lights went out, didn't they? Early in the morning, Craig's data feeds to all of the investment and financial houses went black. I received calls from my advisors immediately telling me it's a disaster. The shareholders will panic. I told them, Craig's shareholders will not panic. Our shareholders have been with this company since we were founded in 2006 and when we first and in 2007. And throughout that day, as the hours ticked by, as the fog cleared, when we saw our stock price still sticking there at 15 cents, frankly, I felt like Francis Scott Key. That, in my opinion, was a pivotal moment for Craig Labs. Sometimes a child doesn't know how strong he is until he's been tested. And yesterday, we learned a little bit about our strengths. We learned that our stock is in strong hands. It's not in the hands of penny flippers. We have never viewed ourselves as a penny stock company. None of us have. The only aspect of this company that's penny stock is the fact that our stock sells for a few pennies. But we have always had a different vision from the beginning. I'm here to tell you tonight, in the third quarter of 2010, that this ship is still on the course that we laid in 2006, and we are accelerating. Now, let's talk about what happened yesterday and why it happened. I think most of you probably already know very well what happened, but let's talk about it a little bit anyway. The OTCBB, the over-the-counter bulletin board, has evidently been dramatically increasing its fees to market makers. That's probably of very little interest to you or me or most people in on this conference room. Those fee increases went into effect, I'm told, in April. But they began affecting us when our shares started having increased volume as we approached the big press conference and the announcement of our scientific breakthrough. Those fee differentials between the OTCBB and other trading platforms began to matter to the market makers who trade our stock. And they began evidently diverting their tradings from the OTCBB platform to the Pink Sheets platform. The OTCBB can invoke a rule 15C211, which essentially says that if the market makers are not trading a stock through their platform, that they can remove the ticker symbol. They did that without notifying us, without notifying the electronic wire services, I believe without notifying the market makers. The result was the data lines went dead for hours yesterday. Shareholders opened up their accounts. At some brokerage firms, the value of their shares showed up as zero. On many trading platforms, it looked like no shares of Craig stock were trading. Nothing had actually happened to the company whatsoever. There had been no corporate change whatsoever. The company has not laid in any of its filings. We remain and intend to continue to remain a reporting company with the Securities and Exchange Commission. All that had happened was that the market makers had changed their trading platform and were not running the trades through the OTCBB, and the OTCBB, as a result, wasn't collecting any fees. The lights went out. The data feeds, the data streams to the financial services websites ended, but there was no panic among our shareholders. Yesterday, we were tested, and today, we know a little bit more about how strong we are. At this point, it's probably very appropriate for me to say that being the CEO of Craig Biocraft Laboratories is one of the greatest and most exciting jobs on this planet. And I'm very proud to be your CEO. I'm very much aware of the confidence you have placed in me, and many of you have placed in me since 2006, to pilot this ship. Now, back then in 2006, we had a vision for a revolutionary technology that to most people sounded like science fiction. Genetic engineering of silkworm, using spider silk DNA, production of advanced biomaterials, new fibers. It sounded pretty radical. But a core group of investors believed in that dream, and research team composed of the greatest minds that I could assemble. And I especially want to reach out and thank Dr. Frazier, Dr. Lewis, and Dr. Jarvis. Those minds have produced something wonderful and beautiful, which we revealed to the world last week. So let's talk a little bit about last week's announcement, the breakthrough, and then we'll go on to talk a little bit about other corporate developments and our vision for where this ship is headed. Last week, and I'm sure almost all of you know, we announced a remarkable breakthrough that had happened inside the laboratories at the University of Notre Dame. Our company has a intellectual property and collaborative research with the University of Notre Dame, and we sponsor and pay for the research in that laboratory. And what was announced was really the culmination of our vision from 2006. And that was the actual production of recombinant spider silk fibers using domesticated silkworm as a production platform. And this is truly remarkable. I'm going to go a little bit off script. And those of you who are interested in further details, if you're not aware of the press conference, go back and pull up the press release from the University of Notre Dame from last week. You can receive a lot of details about what was accomplished. But let me go a little bit off script to give you a little more information, because I think there is some misinformation out there. What we have done is we have created a new composite fiber. These gene sequences have worked exactly in the way we envisioned when we first formed this company. The spider silk DNA has been introduced into the silkworm in such a way that the DNA is incorporated into the silkworm's chromosome and is expressed in the silk glands and ultimately incorporated into the silk fiber. The silk fiber that's produced is a composite fiber. It's composed partially of natural, normal silkworm silk proteins. But it's also composed of what we can, in a shortcut, call spider silk proteins. These proteins, the spider silk proteins, have formed a composite with the silkworm proteins to make a new composite fiber. This isn't science fiction. This is actual science reality, and the materials are being produced right now at Notre Dame. Now, here's where I've actually looked at the blogs. My advisors tell me not to look at the blogs, but you can't help it sometimes. And I see some confusion. There is no extraction technology necessary to be applied to this. This is not a process where we're producing spider silk proteins in small quantities in the silk fiber, and now we'll put the silk fiber through some extraction process and pull out the spider silk proteins. That's exactly what we wanted to avoid and what we did avoid when we set up this production system in the first place. We'll talk a little bit more about that perhaps, but we were looking at the time at rival technologies, other approaches to try to produce these marvelous high-strength proteins. And those systems that were in place and people were trying to develop at that time were attempting to produce the proteins in a standalone system. For example, introducing the gene sequences into E. coli bacteria to get the E. coli bacteria to excrete the proteins. That sounds a little crazy, but scientifically that's very viable. Another company that I studied extensively was doing the same thing with dairy goats, trying to get the dairy goats to excrete the proteins in their milk. Again, it sounds crazy, but scientifically very viable. But those systems, the weakness of those systems was that they were based upon a pharmaceutical model to obtain protein. This company was founded on the original belief that that was the wrong technological approach. They were trying to essentially produce a pile of bricks. Our belief from the foundation of this company was that the problem wasn't producing the bricks. The problem was assembling the bricks into a structure. And that's what we've accomplished here, not the mere production of spider silk proteins, but something that's exponentially more interesting and exciting. The production of those proteins in a way in which they form a composite with the existing spider silk proteins in such a way that we not only have unique fiber, we have a fiber with superior strength, superior flexibility, new mechanical properties that have never been seen on planet Earth. And this is something that for all those of us who have been involved in the company are very excited about, and we have, because we've had our eye on this for quite a long time, we have a very good idea of what the potential is for this technology. So here is where we're at right now with this breakthrough. We've not only produced a silkworm that incorporates these gene sequences and produces a new fiber, a new composite fiber. We have now produced 20 separate strains, 20 separate lines of silkworm producing new recombinant fiber. Now, not all of these fibers have been tested. I'm certain that not all of them are commercially viable. But there's one of these fibers that's been produced. It's the one that I am calling monster silk, that is truly a beautiful and miraculous product. The monster silk is significantly stronger than the silk that could be produced by the silkworm before the transgenesis. It's more flexible, just as we had predicted. But what we didn't know until we'd actually produced the material was how beautiful it was. This material is finer than normal silk. It is actually silkier than normal silk. If you feel this material, if you feel a braided strand, which the laboratory is producing right now, it, in comparison, it makes regular silk feel like horsehair. It is truly a beautiful material. And despite the fact that it's finer and it's more and silkier, it's actually significantly stronger and more flexible. This is a truly wondrous product, and we're very excited. But the fact that we have already produced numerous transgenics, each producing a new type of recombinant fiber, is also very exciting. And what's more, as if this wasn't enough, throughout this process, and especially with the success of the latest round of transgenesis, we have learned. And we've learned how to do this and how to do it efficiently. This product that we're now calling, or that I'm calling, Monster Silk, is just the first generation of Craig Biocraft Laboratories products. Second generation is already in advanced development. We are already creating the gene sequences for microinjection of the next generation of products. And we, based upon the nature of these sequences, we are very excited about the prospect of producing a second generation of materials, which is much stronger than anything that we have produced to date. Even the third generation of materials is now in the planning stage. And those of you who perhaps paid very close attention to the press conference may know that the company believes now, based upon what we've learned, that it is technically possible to produce fibers with this technology that are actually stronger than have ever been produced by native or natural spiders. So that is the goal for the third generation technology, and we are talking about very short steps from first generation to second generation to third generation. We already have second generation in development, and I would say in advanced development. Now let's talk about the market opportunities, because that's really what everybody's interested in. From our perspective, there are three primary markets for this technology. First is the textiles market, and I would refer to this as the mundane textiles market. Right now, silk production, raw silk fiber, is a $3 to $5 billion a year industry. The value-added production is significantly larger than that. The product that we have in the lab right now, the Monster Fiber, I believe is very suitable for this market. I think that it has the potential to make a real penetration into those markets. And for a small company like Craig Biocraft Laboratories, penetration into a $3 to $5 billion market is potentially quite significant. Our interest, though, is not simply in that raw silk market, but it's also in making a penetration for ourselves in a portion of that value-added market as well. We think there are significant opportunities and profit margins to be obtained in that market. The second market is the technical textiles market. This is a much bigger market, and this is the market that we originally set up the company to attack. Technical textiles is approximately $120 to $126 billion a year market, and this is a market for non-apparel related textiles, textiles with superior strengths and superior properties, superior flexibility, materials that are used for non-apparel applications. This is a market that is going to be very appropriate for our second generation of materials, we believe. And those materials are now in advanced stage of development. The third market that we've had our eyes on, and Dr. Fraser talked about this extensively, I think, at the press conference, are medical applications. There's no question in our minds that there are numerous and significant medical applications to this technology. But I've laid these out in order for a reason. First, the textiles market. Second, the technical textiles market. And third, the medical applications, because those are the orders in which we intend to attack these markets. The textiles market is by far the easiest market to attack. The second market, the larger $120 billion technical textiles market, that's where Kevlar is competing right now. That is going to be a market that we can attack, hopefully, with the second generation product. The medical aspects of the technology are further down the road. Those technologies, of course, require FDA approval, and we would be looking at a minimum of several years to make penetrations into those markets. But with the simple and what I would call mundane, from the company's view, simple mundane textile market, we're talking about a $3 to $5 billion market for these textiles. We think that we can make a significant penetration into that market. Let me just take a look at my notes here just one moment. I know Ben is standing by. He wants to ask a number of questions that have been submitted by shareholders. He emailed me some yesterday, and I've made a little outline so I can try and cover some of those in my opening remarks here. A lot of questions about intellectual property and where are we at, what are our rights, what are the rights of the universities, and so forth. So let me lay that out for you. This company was founded based upon my vision of the way in which these proteins could be produced in a system which would produce them in in composites, just the way that it's now being done. We knew early on that we wanted to use certain specific DNA sequences, and those sequences were held by the University of Wyoming. The University of Wyoming held patents on them. And so we brought the University of Wyoming into the project very early on. In fact, the University of Wyoming Foundation was one of our founding shareholders, and they're still holding a rather large block of Craig BioCraft Laboratories stock. Our agreement with the University of Wyoming is royalty-free because they are an equity holder and a founding shareholder of Craig BioCraft Laboratories. And our agreement with the University of Notre Dame, let's talk about that briefly. We originally approached University of Notre Dame after reading a very exciting scientific paper in which Dr. Fraser was a co-author. And that paper described the first creation of a transgenic silkworm. And it used a gene splicing technology, which Dr. Fraser had invented. And so after reading that article, we approached Dr. Fraser and the University of Notre Dame because we knew that his laboratory would be a key element in doing this in as quick and as fast a way as possible. Our agreement with the University of Notre Dame provides that Craig Labs pays for the research. We support and sponsor the research. We brought them some of our original ideas to conduct the research, and of course, Dr. Fraser added his considerable talents and intellectual ability to the project. And our agreement provides that that upon any discovery in the lab pursuant to our sponsored research program, the university will file a patent application. The patents are held by the university, and Craig Labs has a right, an option, to a global exclusive license to commercialize the technology. In regard to all of the discoveries that were revealed at the press conference last week, Craig BioCraft Laboratories has executed its rights to that option. And that includes the actual transgenic animals, the recombinant silk fibers that they are able to produce, the specific methods we've used to produce them, gene sequences. There's frankly a lot of technology there. A lot of technology went into building what you saw at the press conference and what we've achieved. And it's probably an appropriate time for us to say congratulations to Dr. Fraser, Dr. Jarvis, Dr. Lewis, the University of Wyoming, and the University of Notre Dame. These research institutions have really outdone themselves by essentially achieving the holy grail in our little area of endeavor. Our agreement with Notre Dame provides that we have an option on a global exclusive commercial license, and that the university is entitled to a commercially reasonable royalty of between 1% and 6%, 1% and 4% if we use technology from the University of Wyoming, specifically certain spider silk gene sequences. The technology that was revealed at the press conference did incorporate University of Wyoming gene sequences, I believe. So our agreement with Notre Dame related to that technology is essentially a 1% to 4% royalty. I think that's very reasonable. The university has certainly earned it, but I must say that in our dealings with the University of Notre Dame, the university has never been greedy. They've never been after money. Their interests have always been to achieve something for mankind and to be at the forefront, the cutting edge of science. I think they've certainly done that and established their reputation as a leader in this area of technology. Next question. I get a lot of questions. I've seen a lot of questions on the Internet about money. Does the company need money? Is the company going to go to the University of Notre Dame for money? Short answer to that is no. We're not going to ask the University of Notre Dame for money. I don't see any need to do that. I don't think the University of Notre Dame is particularly interested in commercial ventures. The truth is, and this is going to surprise many of our shareholders, I receive many calls every day offering the company money. And I always say no. I am not interested in accepting any money or in capitalizing this company on terms that are not to the company's advantage or that in any way disadvantage our shareholders. When a capitalization deal comes across our table that I think is in the shareholder's interest, I'll look at it. But at the moment, I am frankly turning down deal after deal and getting calls every day for convertible debentures and complex schemes based upon our stock price, our valuation, the trading volume. And these deals ultimately, although they may look attractive in the short term, are dilutive. And we are not interested in deals which sacrifice the long-term growth of this company for a short-term gain. Now, my next note says I should talk about the next generation technology. I think we've done that a little bit. But just to recap, the products that we demonstrated most recently, I view as Craig Lab's first generation technology. Second generation technology, unless something goes wrong, will be ready in 2011. And this new technology, this second generation technology, we envision as being a substantial improvement on what we have already achieved. The third generation, which is already in the planning stage, is what Dr. Frazier was talking about at the press conference. Our belief that materials can be produced using this technology, which are actually stronger and superior to native spider silk. At this point, now that we've made these discoveries, research and development will accelerate. Now that we've opened this door, we see tremendous opportunities for textiles with broad appeal as well as specialty textiles. The scientists who've been working on this project have an expectation that now that they have succeeded, we are going to boost funding to their laboratories and allow them to accelerate this work and apply the knowledge that they have gained through years of labor in this science. I think, frankly, that's a very reasonable expectation. Now that they have demonstrated and we've demonstrated an ability to do this, we'd be foolish not to accelerate the R&D and bring our second and third generations to product as quickly as possible. We are rapidly working towards commercialization of our current technologies and putting ourselves in position to bring our second generation products to market. We have invented something fantastic here. We do not also need to reinvent the wheel. Logistics, distribution, industrial production, weaving of advanced textiles, we don't need to invent those technologies. We need to partner with the companies who already possess them. That is also the safest, surest, and fastest way to move our products into the stream of commerce. In my view, this is going to be accomplished in three ways. One, by partnering through joint venture agreements and licensing agreements with the industrial giants who are in our space. Two, through merger with one of those industrial giants. Or three, through acquisition. To those of you who know me, you know that I often think in terms of metaphors and analogies. It helps me to focus my mind. I view Craig Labs at this stage in its development as a beautiful lady tiger. We are grooming ourselves, developing our technology, and protecting our technology in a way to make us stronger and attractive to potential corporate partners. But the lady tiger is not a wallflower. If an appropriate suitor does not provide us with an offer that is, in our view, in the interest of our shareholders, well, then the lady tiger has claws. In that case, we intend to gather what we need through acquisitions. We intend to grow this company the right way and with the right partners. I've got one final point I want to make before I open this up to Ben. And that is, I know Ben has received a lot of questions asking about gene sequences. He's got a lot of questions asking about protein expression. Some of these questions look like they've been written by microbiologists. In short, I am not going to reveal the recipe book here. I understand that some people won't like that, but you know, go try calling Coca-Cola and asking them for their recipes. I have a job here to do, and one of my jobs, one of my most important jobs, is to protect our shareholders and to protect this technology. And I intend to do that, and I intend to layer protection upon protection. So thank you very much. I want to thank you very much for your interest in Craig Labs. To our shareholders, it's a pleasure and an honor to be the CEO of this company, and I am very cognizant of the faith and confidence and trust you placed in me. This ship is on course, and we are accelerating. We have never viewed ourselves as a penny stock company, and as many of you know, we are perhaps unique in that we are a penny stock company by choice. We actually conducted a 10-for-1 forward split in 2009 to help ensure that our stock would trade in the penny range. Now, that corporate strategy seemed crazy to a lot of people at the time. But when I look around, I see empty spaces where biotechnology companies were all around us. Those companies failed and collapsed as a result of the financial crisis in 2009. Many of them had exciting technologies. If they could have held on another year, maybe, they could have achieved great breakthroughs in each of their fields. But they weren't able to survive in these capital markets. We implemented an innovative strategy which included that forward split, and it enabled us to survive. It survived long enough to achieve these breakthroughs and now grow and expand. We've never viewed ourselves as a penny stock company except for the fact that our stock sells for pennies. I've always run this company as if we had a much brighter future, as if this company was going places, and we are going places. Ben, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, thank you, Kim. First off, hello, everybody. My name is Ben Hansel, and for those of you who do not know me, I am the Investor Relations Manager for Craig BioCraft Laboratories. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to join us today. And furthermore, I'd like to extend a special thanks to everyone who submitted a question by email or phone. Kim, I've logically sequenced the questions for you, and I'm going to start out with the first question. That being, during the Notre Dame presentation, it was mentioned that the silk on display was produced by 20 silkworms. What is the required quantity, and how quickly can the new transgenic silkworms be reproduced into commercial quantities?
Okay, that's a good question. So let me clarify. At the press conference, we showed, I think, 12 different spools of recombinant silk fiber, each produced by a different strain of silkworm. And just to backtrack so that the shareholders are clear, I don't mean that we've got 20 silkworms that have each one is a little different. I mean we've got 20 different strains of silkworm. And some of these are now, in the sixth and seventh and eighth and ninth generation. Once a silkworm has been created with this technology, it passes these traits onto its offspring so that the daughter silkworm is producing recombinant silk fiber and the granddaughter silkworm is producing recombinant silk fiber. In regard to the specific spools of material that we demonstrated, it's true there are 20 different strains producing different recombinant silk fibers. Approximately 12 of those were on display. Each silk cocoon, each cocoon spun by each individual silkworm, has approximately a half mile of silk fiber. And when that is unwound, it obviously results in a half mile of fiber wrapped around the spool. Now, the actual spools that were on display were braided silk. Silk experts within the labs actually took several different strands from the same transgenic line and braided them to make a braided silk fiber that they call a yarn. With this technology, and it was designed with this in mind originally, our ramp-up is very quick. Female silkworm lays between 200 and 300 eggs. Life cycle is between 30 to 60 days, depending upon the strain. And so you can go from a single transgenic silkworm to thousands of producing silkworms in a very short time. The ramp-up is very quick. Do you have another question for me, Ben?
Yes. Did we hear correctly that the spider silks were developed with 20 different properties? Is it safe to assume that other strains could be developed? And if so, does KBLB have proprietary rights to the future strains as well?
Well, the short answer to that is yes. We have the intellectual property rights to what's been developed in the lab and pursuant to our collaborative research agreements. That's the answer to the intellectual property question. Yes, it took us a long time to develop these strains and to create this breakthrough. But now that we've done it, we know how to do it. I'm not going to say this is easy. This is actually very difficult. It's not just a matter of inventing new technologies. It's a matter of inventing new techniques and learning through trial and error. But we now know how to do this. And yes, we're very confident that we can produce the second generation of materials on a much, much accelerated timescale compared to this first generation.
And you do have all the proprietary rights, correct?
That's right. We have the rights to we have exercised our option to the rights to the methodology for producing these transgenics, gene sequences, the actual transgenics, and the fibers that they are producing.
Okay, great. At the press conference, why was there no reference to the fact that Craig Biocraft Laboratories is a publicly traded company under the ticker symbol KLB?
Well, in short, we were a guest of the University of Notre Dame. And I frankly did not feel it was appropriate for us to go on a tirade about commercialism and our stock while on campus at the University of Notre Dame. The University of Notre Dame is interested in improving the condition of man, in being at the forefront of technological research. And frankly, although of course it was an important moment for Craig Labs, this was also not just a commercial event. More importantly, it was an event to describe the scientific breakthrough. I've heard this criticism that we should have, shouted out our trading symbol or something, or maybe done it in a more dignified way. But I think we handled it well and properly. This was. It's going to be viewed in retrospect as a historic moment, and I think we handled ourselves well.
Are you using just one type of spider and silkworm, or is it a matter of getting the right combination of species, and how will you refine the silk to approach that of pure spider silk?
Okay, those are very good questions. Let's start with the last part about how we refine this silk to approach that of pure spider silk. That isn't necessarily the goal here. A good analogy for what we've done, it's not really a good analogy, but an analogy, is concrete. If we can think of a silk fiber, if we use this crude analogy, as concrete, our vision from the beginning was to reinforce the concrete. It wasn't to replace concrete with granite. It was to use rebar to reinforce that concrete. And for us, that rebar was a certain class of amyloid proteins. best what's been accomplished, what's being produced in the lab now, is a composite. The idea of trying to purify it, and frankly misses the point, not to be insulting to anybody, but the object is not to purify this material at all. It's to assemble it in such a way that it is stronger and stronger and stronger. And, conversely, to assemble it in ways that are more flexible, more flexible. Those two properties are related. They're somewhat interchangeable. They're also oppositional. We believe that with this technology, we can essentially customize the fibers so that a customer could come to us next year and say, we really have a need for a fiber with X properties, with a flexibility of this and a strength of this, and that would be like this. We believe that with this technology, we will have an ability to dial that in, create the genetic sequences to do that, and produce a resulting fiber meeting those specifications. Another customer may come in and say, you know, I don't want that fiber. I need something that maybe doesn't need it. I don't need that strength level, but I need more flexibility. Create a gene sequence, introduce it into the organism, and you've got a new fiber. That's one thing that's interesting about the fibers industry. The fibers industry ultimately is composed of so many different niches. If each of us were to go look at his closet after this call, you'd probably find some clothes in your drawer or in your closet made out of cotton, and some out of polyester, some are rayon, some are nylon, some are polyester cotton blends. You might have some wool and maybe some spandex, maybe some Gore-Tex. Probably if you hunted around in your closet, you might find more than two or three dozen different textiles or textile blends in the mix. That's because there is simply no one textile, no matter how perfect it is, that can fit and satisfy all needs. Let's look at Kevlar. Kevlar is a wonderful product, and the people that make Kevlar have every reason to be very proud of it. But most of us do not have any Kevlar in our closets. It's because Kevlar, as wonderful a product it is, and I think sales are estimated at about $5 billion, Kevlar simply cannot replace cotton. It never will. It wasn't designed to, and the makers of it never expected it to. The same thing is true with our technology. We're not going to replace Kevlar. We're not going to replace cotton. We're not going to replace a nylon. Our product is servicing a different niche. But more importantly, each of these products, it's not just one product called Spider Silk. And I'm hoping that maybe it's becoming a little more clear to the market after we filed our intent to use applications on about 7 trademarks. And I think those are just the first of several rounds of intellectual property protection that we'll be filing in that direction. We don't envision this as one universal product to take the world by storm. We envision this as an entirely new class composed of many products, each of which we believe will have a significant niche market. In regard to the other part of your question on specific types of spiders and so forth, that's an interesting question, too. There are many spider species, of course, and many other types of organisms that produce silk, and each produces perhaps something with unique properties. But what's very interesting here is that we are not limited to what has been produced by a spider in Mother Nature. And that's something maybe that's gotten missed in what's happened here. Again, this technology is so new, the world is just opening its eyes to it. But it's possible to create an artificial gene sequence which essentially creates a new custom-designed protein that's never been seen before on the planet, one that's been custom-designed by our scientists to provide strength properties that have never existed. Any other questions, Ben?
Yes. What near-term applications do you anticipate?
I think, and I covered this a little bit in my opening, but the nearest term application is the silk and textile markets. Those are the easiest to attack. And frankly, there's no reason in the world that we should be so highbrow that we don't attack the nearest and fattest markets. Those are the near-term applications. They're not as sexy as some of the applications that I read about on the Internet, but we're not producing unicorns here. This isn't a fantasy company. I notice some people, this sounds like fantasy, but this is reality. We're going to build this company up slowly. I shouldn't say slowly. We're going to build it up on a straight course. We're going to do it the right way. We're going to attack the easiest markets first. The obvious first target in our sites are the textile markets.
How much spider silk is being produced from each transgenic cocoon, and is the quantity large enough to be cost productive?
Well, about a half mile of fibers comes out of every cocoon, and there really is no question it is cost effective. Right now, every silk fiber that's being produced commercially on the planet comes from silkworms. At the raw material stage, that's $3 billion, $3 to $5 billion, and at the value added stage, it's many, many times that amount. That production system is tried and tested. And our transgenic silkworms were designed to be able to be plugged into that system.
What precautionary measures have been taken to make sure the transgenic silkworms aren't released into the wild, and what are the ramifications of the transgenic silkworms entering the native ecosystems? Would they jeopardize the native populations?
Well, here in North America, there really aren't any native populations of silkworm. But more importantly, the silkworm that we use in the laboratory and frankly those that are used in commercial farms, they are a flightless moth. The moth cannot fly. And it's impossible for it to survive in the wild. It needs loving human care to grow. Either on a silkworm farm or in our laboratory. The silkworm only eats mulberry or a special mulberry cake that's baked by our scientists, and it can't fly, and it really has no way of escaping. And outside of the laboratory, without someone to feed it and cut up its food for it, unfortunately, the silkworm would perish. There is no, because of the extremely domesticated nature of this organism, it's been bred over thousands of years, essentially to have oversized silk glands and to produce the largest cocoons. It simply is not capable of surviving and reproducing in the wild. It really needs human intervention at every stage of its life cycle.
When will this breakthrough be peer-reviewed and or published in a scientific journal?
That's a good question. From the company's perspective, never is soon enough. That article would be viewed by some people as a recipe book. And I'm not aware of Coca-Cola ever producing a peer-reviewed article on how they make their delicious recipes. But the reality is that we're working with universities. We're working with university scientists. In academia, the peer-review article is the gold standard. We've always known and we've understood with our scientists and the universities that a peer-reviewed publication would be forthcoming out of the project. But Craig Labs, and I think the scientists too, want to make sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed before that peer review publication is submitted. And we certainly intend to make sure that is done. In fact, the researchers have asked Craig to help support bringing in an additional researcher to do certain gene analysis that might be required for that report, and I think frankly that's a very reasonable request.
Please detail what the exclusive license covers. Is it limited to just a specific spider and moth? And what are the approximate profit-sharing percentages for the University of Notre Dame, Dr. Fraser, University of Wyoming, Craig Biocraft, and others?
Well, I think we covered this a little bit before, but in short, there is no profit sharing. The universities are not so crass as that. The University of Wyoming Foundation is an equity holder in the company. They're a founding shareholder. and as such, they don't receive royalties on the products. University of Notre Dame is entitled to commercially reasonable royalties of between 1% and 4%. Dr. Fraser is a shareholder.
Do you have a venture capital partner lined up, or does the company plan for a manufacturing partner to address this issue? And what are your thoughts on issuing additional shares to raise capital?
Okay. Well, first of all, we don't have a venture capital partner, and I'm not really too interested in one. Venture capital to me means dilution. It means loss of control. It means people that think they know our business better than we do. I'm not that excited about venture capital. I'm sorry, Ben, what was the last part of your question?
What are your thoughts on issuing additional shares to raise capital?
Well, those who've done business with Craig Labs, and I know if any of our scientists are on the phone, they can certainly attest, I throw nickels around like they were manhole covers. And I treat our shares in the same way. I am not interested in diluting. As many of you know, I own a large portion of the company stock. I would be the first person to absorb the brunt of any dilution. And even if that wasn't the case, my job is to protect the shareholders. We will issue shares only when it's appropriate, only when I believe that it's in the absolute interests of the shareholders.
What do you think is a reasonable valuation for the company?
That's a very good question. Only the markets can tell us what the reasonable valuation of the company is. We'll let the markets tell us.
Is there anything holding company back from moving forward from this point on?
Frankly, I'm. what has been the biggest restraint on the company have just come off, and that was the fulfillment of our research dream, and putting together in our own minds and in reality the last pieces of the puzzle to make this happen. Now that we've done it, now that we actually have, and not just once, but 20 times, created these recombinants, I think the company is going to be accelerating. I think that Craig Labs in 2011 and beyond has a very bright future.
Great. Last question. The research news has been great, and the progress is way ahead of schedule. What will create excitement in the near and long-term future?
It's a good question, and my answer might surprise some people, because they're used now to, they've seen some very exciting and sexy developments of the company this last week with a research breakthrough. But really, what is going to bring value to the company in the near term, in the medium term, and the long term is executing on our business plan. Commercialization, bringing in the right partners, market penetration, and then here's the sexy part, the development of our new technology, the second generation and the third generation, which is in the planning. And that is what is exciting to me. I'm executing on our, but foremost is executing on our business plan and bringing these products to commercialization. Everything else will follow.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tim, for your time.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, shareholders. It's been a privilege and an honor, and thank you for joining me here today.
That concludes today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line at this time.